Okay, now we're going to get into the, you know, we've kind of gone over the cleansing and the restoring of the temple and the priesthood and the Passover. And now we're going to get into a trial for Hezekiah and also for Judah as a whole. There was both a national crisis and a personal crisis for Hezekiah, and we'll talk a little bit about those in this session. The main things we'll be looking at are 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles, so if you want to keep those handy, 2 Kings 18 and 19 and 2 Chronicles 32. So Assyria had invaded Israel, and we read about that in 2 Kings chapter 18, verses 9 to 12. It came to pass in the fourth year of King Hezekiah, which was the seventh year of Hoshea, son of Elah, king of Israel, that Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up against Samaria and besieged it. And this would be talking about Israel. And at the end of 3 years, they took it. And someone had mentioned that the significance of the they had found this reference. Even in the sixth year of Hezekiah, that is the ninth year of Hoshea, king of Israel, Samaria was taken. And the king of Assyria did carry away Israel unto Assyria, and put them in Halah and in Habor by the river of Gozan, and in the cities of the Medes, because they obeyed not the voice of the Lord their God, but transgressed his covenant, and all that Moses the servant of the Lord commanded, and would not hear them nor do them. So we see he was taken between the fourth and sixth years of Hezekiah's reign. And this was that deliverance that we referred to earlier. Now Judah they had a similar problem on their hands. In the 14th year of King Hezekiah, so this is approximately 8 to 10 years later, did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, come up against all the fenced cities of Judah and took them. And Hezekiah, king of Judah, sent to the king of Assyria to Lachish, saying, I have offended, return from me, that which thou puttest on me will I bear. And the king of Assyria appointed unto Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. And Hezekiah gave him all the silver that was found in the house of the Lord and in the treasures of the king's house. At that time did Hezekiah cut off the gold from the doors of the temple of the Lord and from the pillars which Hezekiah, king of Judah, had overlaid, and gave it to the king of Assyria. So this is kind of interesting. We were talking about how faithful and how energetic Hezekiah was, and now we see him giving away some of his of the things that he had just set up and giving the treasures of Judah to the enemy. But I don't think this was a lack of faith. It's just that at this time Hezekiah was not ready to fight, to come against an enemy such as Assyria. And I think that this was in a way to buy him time so that he could get organized in that sense. He was all during this time just trying to get the nation itself under control again. And he wasn't really prepared to deal with the threats of other nations yet. And again, if you have any comments, you know, between slides, just raise your hand and or yell at me in case I don't see you. We read in 2 Chronicles chapter 32 of Hezekiah preparing just for that. This is an example of trusting in God, yet preparing, just as we saw with Amy this morning, that she trusted, but yet she still was ready for things that might go wrong. So if you look over those first eight verses of 2 Chronicles 32, we see in verse 7, be strong and courageous, be not afraid nor dismayed for the king of Assyria, nor for all the multitude that is with him. For there be more with us than with him. With him is an arm of flesh, But with us is the Lord our God, to help us and to fight our battles. And the people rested themselves upon the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. So once again, we see Hezekiah's leadership in assuring his people that they would be okay, even against this great foe. And not because of him, but because of God. There is the Lord God to help us and to fight our battles. We see in verses 5 and 6, just before that, how he physically fortified the cities. So this was to help strengthen them physically. And verses 7 and 8 is to emotionally get the people ready, that they are believing in what they were doing. It says, with him is an arm of flesh, and that's mentioned in Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 5. Thus saith the Lord, cursed be the man that trusteth in man and maketh flesh his arm, and whose heart departeth from the Lord. So this was in Hezekiah talking about God's arm. We see in 2 Kings chapter 18, if we turn back to that, of Hezekiah's visit with Rabshakeh. I think it might be pronounced Rabshakeh, but I was always brought up with it Rabshakeh, so I might just switch back and forth. But we see, once again, I just want to mention that Hezekiah was trusting in God and yet preparing himself, not presuming that everything would be okay, thinking that, well, I'm just going to go up against him and just totally put my trust in the Lord and not even do anything. You know, it would be the equivalent to us maybe walking out in front of a car and thinking, well, God is going to save me. I don't have to worry about it. But along with that trust, we're not to presume that God will do everything for us. So read in 2 Kings 18, verse 17, how Rabshakeh was sent by the king of Assyria. And the king of Assyria sent Tartan and Rabsaris and Rabshakeh from Lachish to King Hezekiah with a great host against Jerusalem. And they came, and they went up and came to Jerusalem. And when they were come up, they came and stood by the conduit of the upper pool, which is in the highway of the fuller's field. Now this conduit that is referred to was a way that water was supplied to Jerusalem. And it's pretty interesting, and I just have a little excerpt from a book that talks a little bit about that, and there was evidence found of this conduit. And I'll just read a couple excerpts from that really quick. A century and a half after Ahab, King Hezekiah ensured Jerusalem's water supply by a tunnel connecting the Gihon Spring outside the wall, which that was the source of the water, with the pool of Siloam within. And in the 1880s, there was a discovery about this engineering achievement. And if you think about, you know, doing such a waterway way back then, you know, compared to what we would, all the technology and machinery that we would have to accomplish it now, it's pretty amazing. It says, the tunnel remains intact to the present day. An accidental discovery in 1880 strikingly confirmed the biblical account of Hezekiah's engineering achievement. The lower part of an inscription was found on the rock wall of the tunnel. It was written in classical Hebrew of the period of Hezekiah, and it describes how two teams of miners worked from opposite ends and met in the middle. This Siloam inscription, now preserved in the Istanbul Museum, reads in English translation as follows. And this was the way in which it was cut through. While there were still axes, each man toward his fellow, and while there were still 3 cubits to be cut through, there was heard the voice of a man calling to his fellow, for there was an overlap in the rock on the right and on the left. And when the tunnel was driven through, the quarrymen hewed the rock, each man toward his fellow, axe against axe. And the water flowed from the spring toward the reservoir for 1,200 cubits. And the height of the rock above the heads of the quarrymen was 100 cubits. So that's just some more evidence, once again, that we can see how the Bible is true. Everybody? That was on the surface.
He said people were in some mystery, and Brother Sullivan's name was speaking of Brother Sullivan. But I had never heard of him before.
Okay. Here's there's a picture and a there's an article about it. If you're interested, I'll just pass it around, we'll just continue on, but it has a little map of the tunnel where it went and a picture of a portion of it.
As Buddy mentioned, anybody wants to come and see that tunnel, Sunday afternoon, we're in Jerusalem, we'll conduct a tour to the Hezekiah's tunnel.
I didn't know we were going to have commercials in the middle of this, but...
Hey, whatever it takes.
It's a club.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need a preview of coming attraction.
So anyway, that's the pool that is referred to there, and that conduit. And it's a pretty interesting study. And if you're interested in more of that, I have some more information on that. That probably is a pretty good summary of everything. So we compare that that description there with Isaiah chapter 7 in the time of Ahaz. It says, "It came to pass in the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, that Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up toward Jerusalem to war against it, but could not prevail against it. And it was told the house of David, saying, Syria is confederate with Ephraim. And his heart was moved, and the heart of the people, as the trees of wood are moved with the wind. Then said the Lord unto Isaiah, Go forth now to meet Ahaz, thou and Shear Jashub thy son, at the end of the conduit of the upper pool in the highway of the fuller's field. And say unto him, Take heed and be quiet, fear not, neither be faint-hearted, for the two tails of these smoking firebrands, for the fierce anger of Rezin with Syria and the son of Remaliah." So this is the exact same place. But what was Ahaz's reaction? "Moreover, the Lord spake again unto Ahaz, saying, Ask thee a sign of the Lord thy God, ask it either in the depth or in the height above. But Ahaz said, I will not ask, neither will I tempt the Lord. And he said, Hear ye now, O house of David, is it a small thing for you to weary men, but will ye weary my God also? Therefore the Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel." So we see here that Ahaz refused a sign at this same place. But there was a sign given, as we see a hint of here, and we'll discuss that more tomorrow, God willing. So continuing back here in 2 Kings, it says, "Now in 18 verses 21 to 25, Behold, thou trustest upon the staff of this bruised reed, even upon Egypt, on which if a man lean, it will go into his hand and pierce it. So is Pharaoh, king of Egypt, unto all that trust on him. But if ye say unto me, We trust in the Lord our God, is not that he whose high places and whose altars Hezekiah hath taken away, and hath said to Judah and Jerusalem, Ye shall worship before this altar in Jerusalem? Now therefore, I pray thee, give pledges to my lord the king of Assyria, and I will deliver thee 2,000 horses, if thou be able on thy part to set riders upon them. How then wilt thou turn away the face of one captain of the least of my master's servants, and put thy trust on Egypt for chariots and for horsemen? Am I now come up without the Lord against this place to destroy it? The Lord said to me, go up against this land and destroy it. So this is what Rabshakeh had to say. In verse 21, we see that Egypt was weak and not a good ally. So he's saying, don't bother thinking about getting their help. And verse 22, he says that Hezekiah destroyed your altars. How can you worship now? And of course, those were other gods, not the God. And in verses 23 and 24, he's basically saying, I'll bet you can't get 2,000 riders to fight. And if you could, I bet they wouldn't face the least of my army. And in verse 25, it says, Yahweh told me to destroy you. So now he's trying to attack their trust level on all levels, appealing to any kind of logic that might work to get them over to his side. In verse 32, he tells them, I don't know if I have that up here. Let's see. I do. It says, until I come and take you away to a land like your own land, a land of corn and wine, a land of bread and vineyards, a land of oil, olive, and of honey, that you may live and not die, and hearken not unto Hezekiah, when he persuadeth you, saying, the Lord will deliver us. Hath any of the gods, the nations, delivered at all his land out of the hand of the king of Assyria? But the people held their peace and answered him not a word. And the king's commandment was saying, answer him not. So evidently, when Hezekiah was warning the people and encouraging them to stay with him through this trial, he told them, answer him not. When you're faced with this person that's trying to influence you to their side, answer them not. Don't listen to them. So he said, in verse 32, don't listen to Hezekiah, listen to me. Then you can live and be satisfied with all these things. Your own land, a land of corn and wine, bread and vineyards, oil, olive, and honey. Notice there are six things listed there, the number of man, the number of flesh. He appealed to their fleshly desires there. And then in verse 33, he says, how can you stop us? None of the other gods of any of the other nations could stop us. They were a very powerful nation. So some of these would definitely have appealed to the people. They would have been temptations for them to, especially if they were afraid for their lives, to maybe go over and give themselves up. We know that a great lesson for us, because we have all kinds of temptations, and there were several. If we went through each one that I just ran through really quickly, there's a different appeal to our fleshly desires, whether it be land or money or safety or spiritual guidance from the, in this case it would have been from the wrong God, but there was a lot of temptations there that were put before. So now we see what Yahweh's reply was. And we read about this in 2 Kings chapter 19, verses 2 through 7, and also Isaiah chapter 37, 2 through 7. And reading from Isaiah, it says, he sent Eliakim, who was over the household, and Shebna the scribe, and the elders of the priests covered with sackcloth, unto Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz. And they said unto him, thus saith Hezekiah, this day is a day of trouble and of rebuke and of blasphemy. For the children are come to the birth, and there is not strength to bring forth. It may be the Lord thy God will hear the words of Rabshakeh, whom the king of Assyria his master hath sent, to reproach the living God, and will reprove the words which the Lord thy God hath heard. Wherefore lift up thy prayer, for the remnant that is left. So the servants of King Hezekiah came to Isaiah, and Isaiah said unto them, Thus shall ye say unto your master, Thus saith the Lord, Be not afraid of the words that thou hast heard, wherewith the servants of the king of Assyria hath blasphemed me. Behold, I will send a blast upon him, and he shall hear a rumor, and return to his own land, and I will cause him to fall by the sword in his own land. So we see that this Isaiah was definitely worried about Judah's reaction to this threat and this temptation set forth. And so he gives some support and some guidance and some counsel to Hezekiah, and reminds them and strengthens them in their resolve to resist this temptation. We read from verse 3 that Hezekiah had brought the nation so far, but that they were kind of afraid of the situation before them. They were afraid maybe they couldn't complete what they had started. And they had certainly made a lot of progress to this point. It says in verse 4 that it may be so forth. I'll read the rest of that verse. It may be the Lord thy God will hear the words of Rabshakeh, whom the king of Assyria his master has sent to reproach the living God, and will reprove the words which the Lord thy God hath heard. So he didn't presume again. He wanted to keep in prayer and do all that he could himself to make sure that the people would be not be influenced. And of course, we read in verse 6 there of Isaiah's support in telling them to not be afraid. And it says, Behold, I will send a blast upon him. And this is God, who we know will not be mocked. And this was a direct blasphemy against God. It says, I will send a blast upon him. And that word is ruach, or the word for spirit. And I will cause him to fall by the sword in his own land. So this would have been must have been a great source of strength to know in this time of crisis that God was going to be behind them. Okay, I think we'll continue a little bit further. And the next thing we read of in Isaiah 37, verses 8 through 13, is of Sennacherib's letter. So Rabshakeh had returned, and now this was the next thing to happen. It says he found the king of Assyria warring against Libna, for he had heard that he was departed from Lachish. And he heard say concerning Tirhakah, king of Ethiopia, He has come forth to make war with thee. When he heard it, he sent messengers to Hezekiah, saying, Thus shall ye speak to Hezekiah, king of Judah. Let not thy God, in whom thou trustest, deceive thee, saying, Jerusalem shall not be given into the land of the king of Assyria. Behold, thou hast heard what the kings of Assyria have done to all the lands by destroying them utterly. And shalt thou be delivered? Have the gods of the nations delivered them which my fathers have destroyed, as Gozan and Haran and Rezeph? And the children of Eden, which were in Telassar? Where is the king of Hamath, and the king of Arphad, and the king of the city of Sepharvaim, Hena and Iva? So these were all examples, once again, the same kind of hyperbole that was sent by Rabshakeh, this in a letter from Sennacherib, basically saying the same thing. How can your God stand up against my mighty nation? All these other gods of all the other nations, they were no match for us. So why would you be any different? Very similar to the same kinds of arguments that were given in Rabshakeh's words. But we know that the judgment was going to happen upon Assyria, and that judgment was going to happen soon. One of my favorite verses in looking at Hezekiah's trust is his response to this. When he got that letter, what was the first thing he did? What is the first thing that we do when we are faced with a problem? Do we think about all the possible solutions? Or do we pray to God about it? A lot of times especially if it's a stressful time, we'll just think, well, what can I do? How do I get out of this? Or, you know, what is the solution? But Hezekiah didn't do that. It says in 2 Kings 19, verse 14, Hezekiah received the letter of the hand of the messengers and read it. And once he read it, what was the first thing he did? He went up into the house of the Lord and spread it before the Lord. I think that's a great verse there, that he spread it before the Lord. Just a total humility and putting everything in front of God and saying, you know, help me. Therefore, O Lord our God, I beseech thee, save thou us out of his hand, that all the kingdoms of the earth may know that thou art the Lord God, even thou only. But I know thy abode and thy going out and thy coming in and thy rage against me. Because thy rage against me, thy tumult has come up unto mine ears. Therefore I will put my hook into thy nose and my bridle in thy lips, and I will turn thee back by the way which thou camest. Therefore, thus saith the Lord concerning the king of Assyria, he shall not come up into the city, nor shoot an arrow there, nor come before it with shield, nor cast a bank against it. For I will defend this city to save it, for mine own name's sake and for my servant David's sake. So this was the answer to Hezekiah's prayer, and that's found in 2 Kings. It says, because thy rage against me and thy tumult has come up unto mine ears, therefore I will put my hook in thy nose. And it was a common thing for Assyria when they took captives to literally put hooks in their noses and lead them away by those hooks. Another thing to note about that prayer from Hezekiah is he didn't say save us so that we don't die, you know, which that would be our first thought, I would